Hey guys, welcome to I Talk Movies for the Popcorn Network. I'm Nikki Preston, and today we're going to be talking Rob Schuyler landing his dream role in Hands of Stone and what it was like working alongside Robert De Niro. Trust me, you're not going to want to go anywhere.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movie.
Hey guys, what is going on? Hopefully this song is pumping you up. You are watching I Talk Movies on the Popcorn Network. I'm Nikki Preston. You can find me all over the place on Nikki Preston TV. And I am here with Rob Schuyler. Rob, tell everyone where they can find you.
Where they can find me? Most of the time in Glendale. That's where I live.
Glendale, California. Glendale, you heard it?
Yeah. Oh my God. What are you talking about? My Twitter handles?
Yeah, your
and all
handles.
That?
Yeah. I don't think you want to give your exact address, but if you want to give it to me, I'm fine with that, you know.
Well, my publicist handles all that. I guess I'm all over the place, but you know, most importantly, I'm going to be in Hands of Stone coming out August 26th.
Yes. We are so excited. I can't wait to see the movie. Some of you out there got a sneak preview because it was in Cannes Film Festival. Mm-hmm. How was that going there and at the festival?
I was not able to attend.
No!
I was invited, but I couldn't make it. I had a conflict, as they say in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You had a conflict.
Yeah.
Very, very understandable. Yeah. Totally. But I am really excited for this part because this is your dream role. I was watching an interview. Back in 2008, you were asked what your dream role would be, and at first you weren't quite sure, and then you told them, well, you got to tell the story. What did you tell them your dream role was?
Well, I had this friend who had an interview, an internet show, and he was probing me. He was prodding me, saying, now, come on, Rob, if you could play anybody, you know, Moses or Einstein or Mr. Smith Goes to New Hampshire or whoever, who would you want to play? And I was like, oh, all right, Howard Cosell. So there it was. I was out there in the universe. And, you know, as would happen, and it was a long road to get to the point where I was flown to to Panama. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. It's been a long journey. But I always had that in the back of my mind because I started in stand-up comedy. I used to do bits. I used to do impressions of Howard Cosell. And I do him for my friends prior to getting into stand-up comedy. So he was kind of in my hip pocket, you know, all the way through. And I grew up watching him, so...
Because you were a big boxing fan, too, and he was major in the 60s, 70s, 80s. He announced all the boxing. Plus, I mean, he did the Olympics, Monday Night Football, such a big personality. How do you even replicate something like that on air? You're from New York, so I'm sure you have a larger than life.
Right. So right away, I had a built-in edge on somebody else because we have big mouths. And he's affectionately known as the mouth that roared. So he was an undeniable presence. He was somebody you couldn't not notice. You either you loved him, you hated him. You know, he was just compelling in the sense of... you know, just his bigger than life, larger than life. Sometimes he even took on a larger disproportionate component to the event itself. I mean, people used to tune into Monday Night Football to hear Howard Cosell.
And wouldn't he had something going with Gifford, and they were, and then the other country guy, the country bumpkin, I like to call him, and it was more like a comedy show, and the three of them kind of hashing it all out than it actually was about Monday Night Football.
Yeah, exactly. They were very good, the producers, of putting together three different types. They were kind of like the Three Stooges in a sense. But yeah, in 1970, that's how long ago Monday Night Football is still going on. Mm-hmm. But
now it's taking over everything. Thursday night, every night of the week, you know, they're
It's Tuesday Night Football and Wednesday Night Football. But Monday Night Football is such a franchise. But Howard Cosell actually started out as a lawyer. And little people, you know, that they know that he started in broadcasting, covering the Little League World Series.
Yeah. That is crazy. Like, who would even think? I mean, did he even get? Probably didn't even get paid in the beginning to cover.
But you got to have some passion and determination to want to get into broadcasting, starting out as a lawyer, covering 11-year-olds playing baseball. You know, I mean, that's where he started on WABC TV and WABC Radio back in New York.
And I love it too how he was just so determined. ABC, to be honest, even though he started in radio, they didn't think he was right for TV. They kind of discriminated against him, weren't crazy that he was Jewish. Mm-hmm. In school, mm-hmm. he got, you know, picked on because of that, but he just would not let it go. He was very determined, and I feel like you share that characteristic with him. I mean, you seem very determined, starting out, you know, in stand-up and then working your way up in acting. Definitely, you guys seem very similar.
Well, yeah, you got to have thick skin. You can't take it personally, the rejection. And, you know, I tell people that are not within the industry, as hard as you've heard it is, it's 10 times harder.
Yeah.
And the rejection's crazy. I mean, you know, we in our everyday lives will get disappointed or rejected. You know, somebody, you'll ask for something and somebody mm-hmm. will maybe say, no, not now, you know, or go away, leave me alone. But in theatrical acting, I think the average is you have to go on 50 auditions to get one job.
Most people, they would hear the numbers and just be discouraged right off the bat. I mean, it's like, who? Well, because you spend so much time learning your lines, getting involved in the character, mm-hmm. to go there, to be in the audition room for like a minute, if that, and then...
Yeah, so it's all over. And you go in all pumped up, and then, you know, they give you the thank you, you know, which mm-hmm. is a nice way of saying, leave the room now. So it's like, go out, and we're going to interview somebody else. So... you never, most of the time, know why you got the role or why you didn't get the role. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you'll get a little inkling. You'll get some direct feedback, as I did from the director of Hands of Stone. Amazing young director, talented, super nice guy, Jonathan Jakubowicz.
What did he say to you? What was the feedback you got from him?
Well, he saw my tape in... Panama. He was already on location in Panama, and they sent the tape out after I auditioned here in L.A. And the next night, my manager said, well, the director wants to video Skype with you. So, okay, so you don't know if that's mm-hmm. going to be like a callback or should you, you know, get ready for that. But
yeah, you might have to act right there, which would be kind of awkward. But
yeah. So I had it all set up, and we hooked up via Skype, and you know, I didn't know whether or not it was going to be a second audition remotely, and we just talked for 15 minutes, and then after a while, he, in his Venezuelan, Russian, Polish accent, said, you know, I just wanted to tell you to smile a little bit more. That Colesell is very charming, but that's it. I just want to make sure you're available for the dates. And I go,
that's it?
What? Seriously? It's like I asked somebody out on a date, and he said yes. So I couldn't believe it. He says, no, you blew me away. So evidently he had read an audition of a lot of actors in New York, like 200, he says. Wow. And he said he didn't find what he was looking for there. And, you know, it's flattering to hear from the director who is basically making the decision to give you an opportunity in his film, that, he didn't feel that the movie would work.
Without you.
Well, I don't want to go that far, but if it wasn't cast precisely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's...
And originally, too, they didn't think you looked the part. Sometimes casting directors, they just don't envision, you know, they don't have a good imagination at times, as funny as that sounds.
Right. I had to pound down the door as opposed to opening it up with a crowbar, because I heard about them casting Howard Cosell after, I don't know how long they were looking in New York, but I saw the casting notice. And I was just determined, I have to read for this role. Mm-hmm. And I told my manager, I said, get on the phone, call the casting director. And so she did. She calls me back. And, well, what did they say?
Yeah.
She gives me the old, well, there's good news. No, just tell me what she said. She said, you don't look anything like Howard Cosell. And I go, yeah, of course I don't. I'm bald and I have a beard. I mean, I can look like him. And that's it? It ends right there? And I said, well, if you send over a picture that shows that you look like him, yeah, well, then maybe. So I just took it by the horns and, you know, fast-tracked it. I got the gal cuts my hair, take my beard off real carefully, put on a bad rug, and went to my photographer and got some pictures shot, and then I got in.
Now, do you feel like once, you know, you get your hair cut, you change your outfit, you're in hair and makeup, do you feel more like the person, or is it, because I heard you say it's more internal, and it's got to start inside first before anything else?
Yeah, no, I don't think by putting on, a toupee and the wardrobe really does it. Although I heard Jack Nicholson once say, yeah, acting's half of 50% just a wardrobe, man. Now, that could be, but maybe for certain circumstances. But I didn't want to do an impression of Howard Cosell. I didn't want to do a caricature of Howard Cosell. So even though I knew I could look like him and I could sound like him, and even though I was very familiar with him, his essence, not just his, you know, his facade of his broadcast personality, but, you know, I had read a lot about him, and people don't give him enough credit for being an advocate for, I won't say civil rights, but he was very much instrumental in keeping Muhammad Ali out of jail.
Yeah, because he didn't go. He was drafted, and he didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Howard was real strong. Like, no, we cannot. They had the best relationship. You didn't see a bond like that anywhere else.
No. But anyway, there was multi-dimensional facets of his personality. So I just had to internalize, as you said, from the inside out, what's the essence, which is his attitude, his fiber, you know. I mean, in a sense, channeling him, which I think I did. The hardest element of the shoot for me. Now here we are. We're wearing headsets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first night of shooting. These were long, hot, humid night shoots in Panama. You know, God bless the crew and all the cast. These were very, very challenging scheduling that we had. But the very first night I was shooting, they give me a dead headset. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a live headset, and it was like, just for 30 seconds, I was a deer in a headlight because I couldn't hear. I could not hear myself speak.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if there's anybody out there that's ever had headsets on in a live, you can hear, you can actually hear yourself talk. But not only could I not hear myself talk, I couldn't hear the cadence and the inflection of the rhythm of speech of Howard Cosell. So I had to totally trust my inner being and my inner strength and confidence as an actor, because I couldn't hear a thing.
How many times did you have to do those takes?
Well,
it was so many times you don't even remember.
No. I'm almost embarrassed to say that, you know, either they were in a rush or they were very, very happy with what I did, because I didn't have to do it multiple times. So let's say I knocked it out of the park, you know. And, you know, Jonathan is such an actor's director that if it wasn't right, he'd have a very reassuring, calm way of letting you know, giving you a little note, and finding a moment to do it again, so to speak.
But, I like that, yeah.
Well, he's also the director and also one of the creative producers, along with his lovely wife, Claudine, and Jay Weisleder.
Shout out to you guys.
Yeah. Well, it was their baby. I mean, I think the average gestation period for a movie from idea to completion on screen is almost a decade.
Wow.
9 years, 7 years, whatever. It's a long time. Mm-hmm. But Jonathan had a vision, and what he does with the camera is unbelievable. And being the writer as well as the director, when you know what you're doing, I believe it's an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to be somewhat fragmented in your focus.
Exactly. And it was you too. You were in Panama one night and you guys head off, you realize there was a fight going on, and you're like, come on guys, let's gather around. How was that bonding moment with the cast?
Yeah, I am a boxing fan. So here we are in Panama doing a boxing movie, Roberto Duran. And I had just gotten into Panama and I was just doing some wardrobe checking, and Manny Pacquiao was fighting. And mm-hmm. I said to Jonathan, I said, well, we should all go somewhere, because the night he was fighting was a cast and crew's night off. And he goes, yeah, maybe we should. So we wound up going to Roberto Duran's Bar and Grill. And we all watched it down there, and it was great. I mean, how special is that?
It's
one thing to watch a fight in your living room with your friends, but, you know, to all hang out and watch a fight in Roberto Duran's Bar and Grill.
Doesn't get better than that.
No, it doesn't get better than that.
Now, let's talk about you working with Robert De Niro. I mean, I'm a huge Robert De Niro fan. I know you are as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many questions about it. Like, your first day on set, were you nervous around him? Or what was the energy like? I mean,
No, first of all, he's been a personal favorite of mine for over 45 years. And if you're going to be professional in doing your job as an actor, you can't act amateurish,
mm-hmm.
even when the camera's not rolling. You know, so sure, I'm gonna be respectful. I'm not gonna be presumptuous and call, hey Bobby,
let's,
you know,
take a selfie.
No. So, you know, I treated him with respect, but I wasn't drooling and fawning over him, and I think he appreciates that. But working with him in the scene was quite, exhilarating, because I'm going toe-to-toe with somebody who's at the top of his craft. But what I learned about Robert De Niro, forget about his incredible talent, what impressed me more than that is how hard he works. Because when I was locked in the scene on set, and maybe it was a tight shot on Robert and Edgar, just seeing him work so hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, in sports jargon, you know, there's a saying, you never take a play off. He works his butt off.
That's what I was going to ask, because I've heard he's a very hard worker, but does it mean that he doesn't, sit out a scene, he gives it his all each scene, or asked to do it, you know, over and over until he feels like it's right?
He vigorously each take, you know, and what I also learned, he wasn't hard on himself, you know. He seemed and appeared to want to do it as much as he possibly could to give the director as many different looks as he could.
So it was more about helping them out than kind of an ego thing, like, I want this right for myself. That's really interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and he had some long monologues, particularly in one scene where I ask him a question and it triggers a very pivotal moment in the film, a monologue where he's basically, as Ray Arcel, playing the trainer of Roberto Duran, is holding himself accountable and responsible for his fighter quitting. You know, this is a ferocious, fierce world champion competitor who inexplicably, all of a sudden, in the middle of a championship round, quit. He took that to heart. At that point, I think Ray Arcel was about 80 years old. So he had a long, legendary Hall of Fame career. But that was it. He was so distraught. He couldn't handle that. Like, he was done at that point. And when we were filming this scene, he had a very, very long monologue. And I watched him. I never saw him get frustrated, But I saw him with his tenacity just keep wanting to do it, you know, until, you know, the director said, yeah, hey, we got it.
And I want to know more about your style as far as memorizing lines or your process. Do you have any secrets, anything you could let us in on or any future actors out there?
A method, huh? A method to the madness.
Yeah, we always want to know some type of method, and yet no one is really ever able to explain their method. It's just kind of like, oh, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think if there's a young actor out there that wants to subscribe to the method, you know, which I think is a New York-based acting school or whatever, I think ultimately you have to develop your own method. And what is that? I think, you have to memorize lines. I think the quicker you can memorize lines, you get it out of the way. Because if you're trying to be in camera, on camera, for film or TV, and you're searching for your line, well, that's going to be like a lie detector. It'll read, you know, when you're not there. So get it out of the way. Do as much as you can to be comfortable with the material. And then, again, I went to a film acting school in Dallas, and it was a repertory company where I learned how to act for the film. And my acting instructor, late Adam Rourke, who was a veteran of TV, he did over 100 TV shows, 50 films. The one thing he always used to tell us was, don't play mood. Mood spelled backwards is doom.
I love that. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So he said, make choices. You know, you want to have an attitude, which is way different than mood. You know, melodramatic film, you know, in the silent era. That was all mood, right? I would say get comfortable in your own skin. Learn your craft from a technical vantage point. Acting for the camera is way different than theatrical stage work in New York. So there's all these different nuances. So learn the craft from the technical elements, because if you're aware of all the variables that could come into play, it's not going to throw you. Because the more comfortable you are with your surroundings, the more able you're going to be able to act natural on cue. And that's what acting is. When they say action, all of a sudden you're in this artificial environment, and you have to act natural.
Absolutely right. And do you feel like your background in stand-up helped your acting skills?
Yeah, there's nothing harder than stand-up. There's an old saying that, you know, I think it's dying is easy, comedy is hard, right?
Yeah.
and the hardest form of show business is stand-up comedy, bar none. I would have to, well, you're the writer. You're the director, you're the producer, you're the performer, and you're working without a net.
Yeah.
You know, you're an aerial act with no net. I mean, if something goes wrong, you're in there for yourself. They're not going to yell, cut, let's do that joke again. You know, we're not going to rerun that joke. So stand-up prepared me for all that could potentially happen on a set, and just thinking quick on my feet. And, you know, it was a tremendous experience.
What was it like on the road, traveling? And, I mean, everyone thinks it's glamorous, but I know it's got to be difficult going from city to city.
Well, yeah, I did comedy clubs for 10 years, which is different than doing an auditorium or a stadium. Club work is very demanding. You know, you're doing 5, 6, 7 shows a week. You're working with 2 comics that you may never see again. Sometimes you're rooming with them, or you're, you know, it's like getting thrown into this big blender of insanity. You know, you stay up until 4 in the morning because you do a late show. It takes you a while to come down.
Back, yeah.
Right, so you go to these late night diners. You're in a town. you know, if you don't play golf, you're going to malls and movies. So it's monotonous. Yeah.
So what gave you the courage to be like, I'm great at stand up, but I need to venture out. Acting's what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, you know, I don't know that I had a master plan, but and I don't know if it was progressive in that nature, but I can remember when I was 3 years old, just watching somebody on TV and just mesmerized, just standing in a room by myself saying, I want to do that. Well, I got started later in life. It wasn't until my mid-20s that I started to do stand-up comedy. But I always had it in the back of my mind that I wasn't going to be a career stand-up comedian just touring clubs or, you know, what have you. You know, then it got to the point I was doing stand-up comedy before it was even trendy to start offering stand-up comics their own sitcoms. Mm. So...
Yeah, like Ray Romano and some of the big names out there, Jerry Seinfeld.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Kevin James. So I don't want to say that I got off the line too soon because that's not where my heart was. I love the collaborative effort of filmmaking.
And you also, Usher was in the film as well as Sugar Ray Leonard. How was that? Because I just picture him, I'm sure a lot of people do, as some pop or rap star, and then for him... was he as committed or, you know, his time in?
Yeah, he was very committed. The stunt coordinator, who was also the boxing technical advisor, and I were talking a lot, you know, off camera, so to speak. And he told me that Edgar and Usher were required to go train as if they were real boxers. And he told me that he told them that from the get-go, when he says, when you're in this gym, you guys are boxers. I'm not treating you like actors. And he put them through their paces. And you could see, well, they were both in really great shape. But, you know, during camera takes and everything, Usher was always doing his, you know... doing this, he did a lot of antics that Sugar Ray Leonard would do. Yeah. So he was always sort of rehearsing. Mm-hmm. He was staying in character quite a bit. So he was definitely committed. I could tell that he was enjoying the heck out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think he's going to give up his dancing and music career, but yeah, he loved it.
Yeah. Now, we're going to play the clip. We have a trailer here, and it's so good. I love every part of it. I can't wait to see the film. It's coming out August 26th, so let's take a look.
I've trained more world champs than anyone else in boxing history. I haven't stepped into a ring for more than a decade. In 66 seconds, Roberto Duran changed my life.
I want you to meet the best trainer in the history of boxing, Rey Arcel.
I don't even know the guy from America.
Hello.
It just makes me want to go out and watch it. Do I have to wait until the 26th? I feel like maybe you can help me out.
I can't hook you up. I can help. I can tell you what theater it's playing in, maybe.
Slow down. And go. You can and no comprende. Turn the right hand over. Go.
Duran should fight no one but me. I don't lose.
You put God in the ring, and I will beat him.
And now, Sugar Ray Leonard.
There's your voice right there.
That's me.
He's running in circles around you.
Fight! You sounded like Hussle, too. It didn't even sound like you, but I could tell it was you.
Hopefully.
He gave
me the highest compliment in one of my voiceover sessions, Jonathan. It was very unique. I worked on this film in 3 separate years.
Really?
Yeah. My principal, on-camera stuff was in late 2013 in Panama. And then in April 2015, I was in the recording session. And then this past April, 2016, I went in again. Jonathan was expanding my role in the voiceover realm, and at one point during this past April, I mean, you know, I guess as actors, we're more accustomed to and almost feel more comfortable to be criticized because you build up your skin. But he was so flattering in his remark. After one of the voiceover takes, he says, "You know, you even sounded better than Cosell." And I'm thinking, wow, really? Well, okay, you're the boss, you know, so, yeah.
Did you ever meet Cosell back in the day?
No.
You have plans to meet Duran, though, I think, right? Or is he coming to one of the premieres?
Yeah, he'll be there. Mm-hmm. He'll be there. I met his son, Robbie Duran. He was around the set quite a bit, and I think he had like a, you know, a small role in the film. He was holding down the Duran family spirit in and around the shoot. But I don't know. I haven't met Roberto yet. I know I will meet him. And I'll say this. I've always felt that, you know, you can tell an awful lot about a person by their offspring. Now, I'm not talking about a three-year-old or somebody, you know, dribbling and drooling and wearing diapers, but Robin Duran is a prince of a young man. And I spent a good amount of time with him and had several conversations with him. So by virtue of his character, I already know what Roberto is like as a human being.
You don't even need to meet him, yeah, you know.
But right, exactly. And but I can't wait. I have something personal to tell him.
Oh.
I can't necessarily share it, but it's very much I think it'll mean something to him beyond just a kind word, and I will give him a giant bear hug.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Man, I have so many questions for you. We're running out of time. I do want to show
what
Along Came Polly.
What time is it?
It's already 6:15. We don't have that much time.
Here. Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah, it flew by. So
wow, that Novocaine really works. I didn't feel
knocks
anything.
You out. So you don't even remember any of this interview. I'm going to be like, "Hey, no. Rob, what's going on?" And you're going to be like, "Nikki, who?" So you've been in so many movies. You worked with Alec Baldwin. You've worked with Jennifer Aniston.
So you get to show my most, what's the word, iconic, up to this point, clip. Okay.
Still to this day, I laugh. It's Along Came Polly. You're with Ben Stiller and Philip Seymour Hoffman playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. The shirt off scene, it's pretty amazing. Let's take a look.
Roll the tape.
Yeah, roll the tape, please.
Well, there's a lot of backstory to the filming of that, but...
Oh, I don't know how... We got to get into as much as we can.
Oh.
You're right there catching the basketball.
I had to dumb down... I had to dumb down my basketball skills. They were squirting me with glycerin water to make it stick in my hairy body.
Oh, my God.
I had to coordinate a dribble and jump off of an incline trampoline to get up
high.
So
oh, wow.
There was a lot of coordination going on. It was crazy.
So they don't realize how good of a basketball player you are from this scene. That you're really
No. I had to dumb it down because, you know, the scene didn't call for my A game, you know?
Yeah. How many times did Ben Stiller have to have, you know, his face rubbed against your stomach?
Well, we became very intimate, in a sense, yeah? Mm-hmm. I don't know, 15 times, but, you know... With that incline, you know, to have to full force dribble and jump and time a jump and lean, because, you know, Caucasians don't have a 47-inch vertical leap, and I had to get up high enough to slide, and it was kind of challenging. But, you know, it was unique, yeah.
And that was, you probably met him like 10 minutes before that scene or something.
No, well, we were working the day before, but you know, still... I mean, you know, it was unique. When I auditioned for the role, large, hairy basketball player, I'm large, I'm hairy, and I can play basketball. And I didn't quite know the punchline of the setup, which was to, you know, he was a germaphobe in the movie, you know, and he didn't want to touch M&Ms in a bowl, you know, he didn't want to touch the flushing of the toilet. So that was like a big building gag where he's so germophobic as his character. He's getting smashed mouth in the face with all my sweat, you know, when he gets a mouthful. So, yeah, it was...
And I love the late Philip Seymour Hoffman is like, oh, whatever. No, you take... He's so, like, nonchalant about it. It's pretty funny. But, you know, let's get back to Hands of Stone. I just love that I had to throw that out there because I was a huge fan.
Yeah, and you couldn't get by without embarrassing me,
I had
right?
to embarrass you just a tiny bit. But you got thick skin. You're from New York.
Yeah, I do.
We both are, even though you don't think upstate New York counts as a true New Yorker.
No, well, we'll annex it. We'll give you some, you know, cred. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Give me a little bit of credit. I mean, I lived in Brooklyn for a tiny bit, mostly Manhattan.
I was born in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all walks of life can trace themselves to Brooklyn. 6 degrees of separation, all traces to Brooklyn. I bet you Moses had relatives in Brooklyn. Everybody somehow is, you know, connected to Brooklyn.
I'm from Bensonhurst.
Oh, really?
Oh, there you go. Honeymooners. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Honeymooners is Bensonhurst, sure.
Now, are you a Brooklyn Dodgers fan from back in the day, or do you like the Yankees?
I grew up a Mets fan, but I crossed over up until 10 years ago. I used to say the only time I would root against the Dodgers is when they played the Mets. Now, for the past 10 years, I say the only time I root against the Mets is when they play the Dodgers. So I've come full circle. I'm a major Dodger fan, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're doing pretty good right now.
So what was the hardest thing you feel... as far as on set with the film, like if there was any, I guess I want to hear both, like the hardest thing on set, but then also the easiest part or the most fun of being on set for Hands of Stone.
Listen, before we conclude, I have to give props and a shout out to Edgar Ramirez. Unbelievable young actor, but more importantly, it's just a super nice guy. He was always thinking outside of the box, you know, devoid of ego. You know, it wasn't about him. This wasn't about him. He was a consummate professional, but the consummate team player. And he and I found some moments that weren't even scripted, just as actors. So I have to give my props to Edgar Ramirez. Yeah, he was fabulous. And I have to tell you, the crew, it was... bar none, the best crew that I've ever worked with. When you're on film sets, and we were virtually outside. I mean, it's hot, humid, tropical weather in Panama. And these were night shoots. I'm Russia Polish, you know, and I sweat in a snowstorm. So I can't tell you how much of a challenge it is just in a studio to stay, you know, somewhat dry. I never had a look for a crew member to, you know, pat me down and make sure I was always camera ready. So I would say the climate, the conditions of shooting in the open air in Panama was the most challenging. And never did I see a cross expression or an attitude from any of the crew members. I mean, they were just phenomenal, as you know, well as all the fellow cast members that I work with. It was... overall, the best experience that I've had in my career up to this point, for sure.
Amazing. Well, I am so excited to see the film. It opens everywhere August 26th. Rob, tell everyone where they can find you. Your handles again, if you want to reveal that.
I don't know. What is it, Amy? Is it Rob R. Skyler? On Twitter, R. Skyler.
R. Skyler. Everyone follow R. Skyler on Twitter. You can follow me everywhere, Nikki Preston TV. Thank you so much for being here. That's all the time we have today for iTalk Movies for the Popcorn Network, but we're going to see you next time.
Where's my popcorn? I didn't get my popcorn.
There's popcorn out in the hall, so I'm going
to
personally
When I go
bring
to the
some.
Movies, I eat all my popcorn before the movie. So
before the movie even starts.
Yeah.
You got to, like, that's why I give it to someone else. If I'm going to the movie, I put the popcorn in their lap. And I only, like, will take a few pieces at a time so I don't eat it all before the movie starts.
I'm like a cannibal when it comes to popcorn. My lovely wife over there is, you know, always giving me her popcorn. So, yeah.
Popcorn for everyone.
And I want to say this is the best thing. No disrespect to Hands of Stone. This lady is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
How did you guys meet?
On the internet.
Really? That's how the kids do it these days.
Yeah.
Everyone's...
Yeah. The internet is the bar and grill of the mm-hmm. millennium, right? I mean,
it is. When you're at the bar, people don't approach mm-hmm. each other anymore. It's awkward. It's weird. That's the only way you find someone now is online.
Well, yeah, you don't have to buy somebody. There's no 2-drink minimum on the internet, right?
You're right. Well, it's like a 2-emoji minimum or something. We'll send you a smiley face. And
Yeah. And you don't have to get the, what's the word, the instant rejection, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe you just won't hear, but we hit it off right away.
Oh, that's instantly. So great.
Her 3 words, not I love you, were... Tell me more.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
That was it. So that that resonated. She hooked me just off of that. Tell me more. And obviously, I have a propensity to tell people mm-hmm. more.
Exactly. How long have you guys been together now?
Well, we got married in April, April 22nd. So we're newleweds.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
We are, and I in a sense, how long have we been together? This is America's greatest import. Lisa's from Canada, so...
Nice.
Yeah. So it was not only an internet romance, it was a long distance
romance. Oh, wow, that's hard, too. Right? And with your schedule, if you're traveling and going different places...
Yeah, and I'm wanted in Canada, mm-hmm. So I have to make sure... not in a good... No, I'm kidding.
Well, Rob, thank you again so much. Hands of Stone comes out August 26th. I got to know what month we're in, and that's all the time we have for iTalk mm-hmm. movies. But you got to join us again next time, and I'm so excited to see
thank
the movie.
Thank you for having me. No this problem. Has been fun. I can't believe 50 minutes
I know,
went by.
It went by so fast. That's crazy. Very fast. Bye, guys. Thank you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.